Take your Bibles this morning and make your way to Philippians chapter 1. We are in a series walking through this letter written by the Apostle Paul while in Rome in a prison to a group of believers in a city called Philippi that he loves dearly. He was very instrumental in the beginning of the church there and has some very dear friends there. And he's writing to them a letter of encouragement, more than just a thank you note. It's really a letter of inspiration and encouragement that they would make progress in their faith for the gospel. And today we come to one of those topics. We're down in verse 12, and it's just one of those that really, really resounds with each of us, because it just says to us this, that by the example of Paul's life, we know that we can run right through any roadblock that stands in the way of our spiritual progress. Just the other day, my wife and I decided to make a trip. It's become an annual thing with our family, our extended family, and that is to go down to Perry, Georgia, to the Georgia National Fair. And on this particular day, as is sometimes the case, we were the last ones to make the trip. Everyone else had already arrived at the fair and actually had made several phone calls to us wondering when we were going to arrive. And so by the time we got to the interstate, and it was a little drizzly that day, a little rainy, but man, the traffic was pretty good, and so we were making up time. I felt really good that, you know what, we were not going to miss much of the day's events and the family fellowship. And so we're just cruising along, and things are going really, really well until we get down to the point where 75 turns off onto 475, and we made our way onto 475, and I was blazing a trail for Perry, Georgia, and all of a sudden, congestion. Traffic began to slow, and then it began to grind to a screeching halt. And I was like, oh man, so much for making good time. I mean, everything was going so great. We're gonna be able to get there. You know, no one's gonna be able to complain about us being late. I mean, we were everything was working out good, and now a screeching halt. And I want you to know, just to be honest with you, one of my greatest points of frustration is traffic. I would rather drive 2 hours out of the way and still make progress than sit still on the interstate for 30 minutes and not go anywhere. But that's exactly where we were. And so, man, I was like, oh, what is going on? This is not the time of the day for traffic. I know it's raining a little bit, but it can't be that bad. And you know, we're just inching along. And every moment, anxiety is growing in me. Have you ever had that happen to you? I mean, frustration is just growing. I can feel it growing, you know. Road rage. I didn't cuss, didn't shoot anybody, none of that was going to happen, but man, I could feel the road rage. And all of a sudden, you know, as we made our way after just for a while being in this traffic, I can see this sign, and it's an orange square turned on its side, and it says, road work ahead. And I'm like, you got to be kidding. I mean, that's it. That's all of this traffic backed up. I mean, we're down to a halt here. We're barely moving just for a little bit of road work. And as I thought about it, you know, what a great picture of so many of our lives spiritually. You see, all it takes for us, when we're making progress, everything's moving along fine, we may be a little late in the game, coming behind everybody else, but all of a sudden we're making some progress, things are moving, we're growing, we're excited, and then there's just a little road work, a little conflict, a little suffering, little pain, a few obstacles, and suddenly our spiritual progress just grinds to a halt. You know, I thought, that's the way it is, but it's not the way it should be. We shouldn't be surprised that obstacles come, and that challenges happen, and that roadblocks are thrown in front of us, because we have an enemy who never sleeps or tires of throwing obstacles in our way. His name is the devil, Satan. In fact, there's probably no better term than the one that the apostle Peter uses in 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 8. And you've heard this verse before, but listen to what he says. He says, be sober-minded, be watchful. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, seeking someone to devour. You know, we pay attention to the latter part of that verse. We need to pay attention to the first part of that verse when he names Satan as our adversary. He says, your adversary. I mean, he is your adversary. He is my adversary as a believer living for Jesus. And he's walking around looking for somebody to devour. making all this noise, throwing obstacles, pain, suffering, whatever he can in our path to slow down the progress of our faith. And he's successful oftentimes. But that's not all that the Apostle Peter had to say to this group of people in Asia Minor who were believers and they were experiencing some suffering. In fact, just a few verses earlier in chapter 4, verse 12, he says this, "Beloved, do not be surprised at the fiery trial when it comes upon you to test you, as though something strange were happening to you." He's saying, don't be surprised by trials. Don't be surprised by roadblocks. I don't know why I was surprised. I mean, I've been around Atlanta long enough, and I've traveled in Georgia long enough. I should have planned for that. Because the very moment you don't plan for traffic, you're going to have it. I mean, the very moment you're running behind and you need to stop by the grocery store, just pick up a few things, you're going to get in the slowest line where the cashier is just learning how to punch in the codes. You know, the moment you're behind, you're going to get in the slowest line of traffic, or you're going to choose the wrong interstate the wrong way, and you're going to be stuck. He said, listen, I want you to know, spiritually speaking, do not be surprised that you experience trials. Do not be surprised that there are roadblocks thrown in your path. I mean, Satan is here. He is your adversary. He's doing everything he can. Those things are coming, and they will indeed test you. I guess what surprises me is this. It's not that trials come and that we all face these roadblocks. What surprises me is how often they result in the halting or hindering of our faith. That whatever progress we're making, whatever gains we're making in Christ, all of a sudden when a little pain, suffering, obstacles, opposition comes to us, everything stops. I mean, right there on the spot, we just stop. And that shouldn't be. That's why the example of the Apostle Paul is so, so powerful today. Because if anybody knew anything about trouble, Paul did. If anybody knew anything about roadblocks, I mean, Paul did. I just listen to this. In 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 21 through 28, let me just read you a part of that passage. He gives us kind of the long list of his roadblocks. He says, 5 times I received at the hands of the Jews the 40 lashes less one. 3 times I was beaten with rods. Once I was stoned. 3 times I was shipwrecked. A night and a day I was adrift at sea, on frequent journeys, in danger from rivers, danger from robbers, danger from my own people, danger from Gentiles, danger in the city, danger in the wilderness, danger at sea, danger from false brothers, in toil and hardship, through many a sleepless night, in hunger and thirst, often without food, in cold and exposure, and apart from other things, there's a daily pressure on me of my anxiety for all the churches. Paul said, listen, you want to talk about trouble? I mean, he could really sing the song, Nobody Knows the Trouble I've Seen, because he really, really went through it. And all for one reason, for the gospel of Jesus. I mean, we talk about our suffering, we talk about our pain, we talk about our opposition and the things that we face in life, and oftentimes it has nothing to do with our life in Jesus, not that we're living boldly for Jesus. It's just the circumstances of living out everyday life in a very sin-filled world. But Paul was living on point, on target for the gospel of Jesus. And in the midst of living for Jesus, he faced all kinds of struggles. Now, what's so amazing to me is what happened in his life in the midst of those struggles. You see, in 2 Corinthians, we have the long list of his struggles and his roadblocks. In Philippians chapter 1, beginning in verse 12, down through verse 20, we have the short list. And I want you to listen to how Paul describes his roadblocks and his approach to them as very few people do. Listen to what he writes. I want you to know, brothers, that what has happened to me has really served to advance the gospel, so that it has become known throughout the whole imperial guard and to all the rest that my imprisonment is for Christ. And most of the brothers, having become confident in the Lord by my imprisonment, are much more bold to speak the word without fear. Some indeed preach Christ from envy and rivalry, but others from goodwill. The latter do it out of love, knowing that I am put here for the defense of the gospel. The former proclaim Christ out of rivalry, not sincerely, but thinking to afflict me in my imprisonment. I love this part. What then? What then? Only that in every way, whether in pretense or in truth, Christ is proclaimed, and in that I rejoice. Yes, I will rejoice, for I know that through your prayers and the help of the Spirit of Jesus, this will turn out for my deliverance. As it is my eager expectation and hope that I will not be at all ashamed, but that with full courage, now as always, Christ will be honored in my body, whether by life or by death. And here's the most famous verse in this whole chapter. For to me, to live is Christ, and to die is gain. And what's so amazing as I read that is what was happening in the life of the Apostle Paul and what was happening in his faith. Look again at verse 12. I want you to know, brothers, what has happened to me has really served to advance the gospel. But what had happened to the Apostle Paul? I mean, if you want to read it, you just go back to the book of Acts, start in chapter 21, and begin reading through the end of that book, and you'll see that Paul was on a journey. He was making his way to Jerusalem. As he made stops on his way to Jerusalem, he was warned that what waited him there was nothing but confinement and imprisonment. But he was determined to go, and so he made his way there, and exactly what was said would happen to him is what happened to him. He was falsely accused by his own people. He was refused a fair trial by government because of public pressure. He was passed around from place to place and kept in prison. He was threatened. His very life was threatened. He was put at risk time and time again. And then, as the map will show, he was put on a boat and he was shipped to Rome because of his own appeal. He made an appeal to Caesar in hopes that there, in that situation in Rome, he would get a fair hearing and a fair trial. And so he's put on a boat. He makes his way to Rome, and along the way, he's shipwrecked at Malta, almost loses his life, and then he arrives in Rome. He does not arrive in Rome as he had once hoped. Now he was in the company of the condemned, a prisoner. And there he was held as a prisoner in Rome for 2 years. In the midst of his imprisonment, he writes these words, this letter, to a group of believers in the city of Philippi, a long way away, not to complain about his circumstances. It was not a woe is me kind of letter, pray for me, woe is me. It was to comfort them and encourage them that even though he was in the middle of one of those roadblocks in life, he was progressing in his faith. And that's so powerful because it so rarely happens that in the midst of struggles, in the midst of trials, I mean, we are experiencing a progression in our faith. In fact, you say, well, what were his trials? Well, real simply put, number one, he was a prisoner facing execution. I don't know what that is like. I don't know what it's like to be in a jail, uncertain of your future, but anticipating that one of the outcomes could be that you are going to be killed because of the accusations against you. And that was the exact situation of the Apostle Paul. And we're not talking about a fairy tale here. This was a real deal. He was facing death. He was in prison. And that's a real roadblock. It was greater than anyone I've ever faced in my life, but that was one he was facing. And the second one is actually, be honest with you, kind of strange. When I read it and read it and read it again, it really is still confusing. But here is the point. He had Christians who were attempting to cause him pain through the preaching of the gospel. And that's what it says. It says down in verse 15, some indeed preach Christ from envy and rivalry, but others from goodwill. The latter do it out of love, knowing that I'm put here for the defense of the gospel. The former proclaim Christ out of rivalry, not sincerely, but thinking to afflict me in my imprisonment. And so what he's saying is there are believers in this city that are proclaiming the gospel of Jesus and in some way trying to inflict pain on me. Now, I don't really know exactly what was happening, but there are some possibilities. For example, it may be that they were thinking to proclaim the gospel of Jesus, and in doing so, the government would become even more hateful toward Christians, and the persecution of the Apostle Paul would become even greater and intense. Or it may be that because Paul was in prison and couldn't go out and share the gospel with others, they were trying to produce some sort of jealousy in him by coming back and telling him time again how many people were actually coming to Christ, when in fact, what it produced in him was the exact opposite, nothing but rejoicing that people were getting saved. Now, that was his roadblock. Now, what was his reaction? Let's just walk through this real quick. We're just going to walk through these verses, just a list. Number one, the gospel was advanced. I mean, when's the last time you could say that in the middle of a roadblock, the gospel was advanced? You know, when you faced opposition, where you're in the midst of pain and suffering, We had, you know, your life was kind of put on hold. You could say to someone, you know what, but in the middle of all this, the gospel's advancing. And you say, well, how was it happening? Well, the second thing, down in verse 13. So the guards and the rest in prison heard about Christ. He says, so that it has become known throughout the whole imperial guard and to all the rest that my imprisonment is for Christ. You know, I love that because it just means that the Apostle Paul, in the midst of his circumstances, instead of pouting about his situation, he was still faithful to proclaim the gospel to those he was imprisoned by and those he was imprisoned with. The other prisoners got to hear about Jesus. That's pretty cool, isn't it? He had literally a captive audience, both those imprisoned and those who were his guards. It kind of reminded me a few years ago, I got to speak down at the Capitol. When they begin their legislative session, they invite pastors to come and do devotion there. And I can remember vividly what happened. When I walked in the room, it kind of caught me off guard because it was kind of chaotic in this room with all of these legislators. They were all walking around talking and just mulling around. And the Speaker of the House got up and he said, sit right here, preacher. And so I sat on the stage and he got up and took his gavel and banged it down a couple of times, got everybody's attention and said, all right, everybody, sit down. It's time for our preacher. And I thought, man, what an introduction. And I don't know who he was talking to in the back of the room, but he said, lock the doors. Nobody's leaving until he gets finished. I said, man, I need you at church on Sunday. That's kind of how the Apostle Paul felt. Instead of complaining about his situation, man, I am in prison, but I'm not here alone. There are other prisoners here, and they need the gospel of Jesus. If anybody needs to know how the captive is truly set free, those that are in chains. And there are others that are here that are ones who are watching over the jail, and they too need to know the gospel. And he might have been even reminded of his days in Philippi when he and Silas were singing praise hymns to God and sharing testimonies concerning the glory of the gospel of Jesus, and the earthquake took place, the prison doors were open, and the Philippian jailer ultimately comes to Christ and his whole family because of the proclamation of the gospel. And so the gospel's advanced, the guards and the rest heard about Jesus. Number three, other Christians became bold in sharing Christ over their fears. I love that. If you look down, it says that in verse 14, most of the brothers, those are believers, having become confident in the Lord by my imprisonment, are much more bold to speak the word without fear. You know, you wonder what happened, and I'm so thankful that it doesn't, but if you could just imagine if for one moment that in the middle of this service, police came and arrested me, took me off and threw me into jail, stood up in front of this whole congregation and said, listen, that in this country we have just decided that Christianity is nothing but an offense to this country. And we are throwing pastors in prison, and we will begin executing them tomorrow. Not because of anything other than their proclamation of the gospel of Jesus Christ. We want you to know that your very lives will be threatened if you continue to live life for Christ out loud. I wonder, what would your reaction be? I mean, you might be mad, but is tomorrow at work, are you going to be the first one to go around to every office and share the gospel of Jesus? See, most would be afraid, filled with fear. Paul said, you know what happened? Most of the brothers, knowing that I am in prison and I am facing possible death because of my faith in Christ, have overcome their fears and are preaching the good news of the gospel of Jesus. That's what's happening. Number four, he's happy. He says down at the end of verse 18, in that I rejoice. And then he says, yes, I will rejoice. His heart is filled with joy because of what's happening with the gospel of Jesus. Number five, Paul has gained full courage for his future. Look down in verse 20. He's in prison now, and he writes this, as it is my eager expectation and hope that I will not be at all ashamed, but that with full courage, now as always, Christ will be honored in my body, whether by life or by death. He's saying, as I look to the future, and by the way, this term, and I'll talk about it in a minute, this term is talking about being focused on the future, eager expectation. He's saying, as I look to my future, all I see are brighter days ahead. I have full confidence in the ability of Christ to watch over my life, both today and tomorrow. And then the last thing is this. He says this. But that with full courage, Now, as always, Christ will be honored in my body, whether by life or by death. Christ is honored. He's saying in the midst of all of this, in the midst of this whole struggle, in the midst of all these roadblocks, I want you to know Christ is honored in my life, and he'll be honored in my death. I am sure of that. Now, that's progress. In the middle of roadblocks, that's progress. Now, what we learn is how to run through roadblocks, spiritually speaking. When in the midst of our progress in our Christian faith, and all of a sudden we face some opposition. Maybe it's direct opposition. Maybe it's just suffering. Maybe it's a struggle of the heart. Maybe it's a very public problem. In the midst of that kind of pain and suffering and opposition, that roadblock, we learn how to run through those roadblocks in the power of Jesus. Let me just give you the list. Number one, if that's going to happen for us, we've got to view adversity as an opportunity to advance, not retreat. You see, that's what happens to many of us. The moment we face adversity, we want to cry out, "Why is this happening to me? This is unfair. This shouldn't be." We immediately react and retreat. We go backward instead of forward. Life shuts down, spiritually speaking, for many people. We just get mad at God because of the difficult days of our circumstances. That wasn't Paul's view at all, was it? I mean, after all, he was in the middle of being a missionary, being the apostle, the one sent, carrying the gospel to the Gentiles. And what happened? He gets unjustly accused in Jerusalem, passed from one jail to another, heard casually by governors and rulers, and now passed on to Rome and still is a condemned man in prison. And yet he views that opportunity, that adversity, as an opportunity for spiritual advancement. I'll tell you something. Now I want you to listen. The days you face your greatest struggles will be the days, if you'll look, you'll have your greatest growth as a believer. Because in those days of greatest struggle, it's just you and God. There are no exits, no alternatives, and no one else can help. I remember reading a book written by Charles Stanley entitled How to Handle Adversity, and he said as he went through one of the greatest trials in his life that he found at the end of that it was some of the most fruitful and productive days in his spiritual walk because he just listened for what God was saying. If you're going to grow, if you're going to progress in your faith, if God's going to be honored in the middle of those roadblocks that are thrown in your path, you've got to view adversity as an opportunity to advance and not retreat. Second thing, you've got to refuse to let fear rule you. You see, what happens to us when adversity comes, when those roadblocks come, we react in fear. Because we sometimes don't know what to do, and sometimes we don't know what will happen if we do what we're thinking we ought to do. And fear has a paralyzing effect on your life. How many times have you talked to someone that's facing a big decision in their life? I mean, it's huge. And you've talked to them and you've prayed for them and you go, "Hey, what are you going to do?" And they say, "Well, I don't know." And you see them again a week later. "What are you going to do?" "I'm not sure. I don't know." "Well, what are you going to do?" A week later, "I don't know." And a month later and 2 months later, they're still saying, "I don't know." And if you stop to ask them, "Why have you not made a decision?" And they'll just say, "I'm afraid to make a decision." That's fear. That's the paralyzing effects of fear. In the middle of our roadblocks, instead of allowing fear to win, we need to continue to have complete faith and trust in God. The one who guides you through the days that are so easy is the one who still holds your hand when the days are filled with trouble. It's not a time in trouble to have less faith. It's a time to have more. You see, when days are easy, it's easy. It's almost faith light, L-I-T-E, because it's easy to trust Him. But when days get tough, man, there's no time in our life when we need God more than when the roadblocks come, when those troubles come. So don't let fear rule you. Have faith. Complete faith. Number three. And this is going to sound a little odd, but it is really true in his life and should be in ours. Take joy in the spread of the gospel. In the midst of our trouble, in the midst of those roadblocks, you say, what can I find joy in? What do I have to be happy about? I mean, I'm going through great struggles in my life. What do I have to be happy about? I tell you what we have to be happy about if you're a believer. Do you belong to him? And the one who saved you is the one who will deliver you. He may get you out of that trouble that you're in and keep you here. He may take you on to be with him forever. But the truth is, in the end, everything's going to be fine because of him. And so we should take joy in the spread of that gospel, that good news. You see, that same good news is good news for everyone. That's what Paul did. I mean, he had guys that were going out preaching the gospel and coming back and telling Paul about it and thinking that, you know what? We're inflicting pain on him. He can't get out of this jail and go tell others. And we're seeing people come to saving faith in Christ. He's going to be jealous. Or you know what? We're stirring up the whole city. They're going to be even madder at him. And he's going to be killed maybe because of the gospel. And we're doing everything we can to create problems for him. And in that, he says, I rejoice. Man, I take joy in that. That people are coming to know Jesus. Now, let me just make this point. If that's going to be true for you, then in the midst of your roadblocks, you need to be more aggressive in sharing your faith than ever before, as Paul was. Number four, pray. Pray and invite others to pray. And Paul says in this passage that he knows that the prayers of God's people are being offered. We need to pray. You know what amazes me? Sometimes when we go through our greatest struggle and we take the position of being mad at God, when we need him the most, we talk to him the least. You need to pray and invite others to pray in the midst of your roadblocks so that you'll have the strength and the faith to walk through it and remain faithful. Number five, you need to make God's glory your goal. And I tell you, there is something about singleness of purpose that has just power. I mean, just has power. Have you ever seen a child that is just determined to do something? I mean, if you're a parent, you've seen that happen. And you've asked yourself, I wonder if we have a strong-willed child. You just have a very determined child. They have a single purpose. And you tell them, do not take any more cookies off that table. And before you can turn around and sit down, they are now already making a way back to the kitchen. And you tell them again, and they make another way. Before the day is over, the plate is empty and all the cookies are gone because there is one child with a single purpose, and that is to eat the cookies, and he will not be hindered. There's something about singleness of purpose, and it presents power in life. And I want you to know that Paul, in the midst of all of this, I mean, I love this, in the midst of all of this, he says, as it is my eager expectation and hope that I will not be at all ashamed. And he's not saying that there's a possibility to be ashamed. He's saying, I know that there's no way I'll be ashamed because of who Christ is in me. That with full courage, now as always, Christ will be honored in my body, whether by life or by death. He's saying, come what may, but my purpose is that God will be glorified in me. If I live, he gets glory. If I die, he gets glory. Now there's a two-word phrase here that's very important. Verse 20, eager expectation. There's one Greek word translated into those two words in the ESV, and that word is only used one other place in all the New Testament, in Romans chapter 8, verse 19. And it basically means to stretch your neck, to look into the future. In other words, I'm not looking at anything else. I've got a fixed gaze. I'm looking over everything else in my life, present, past, and future, to see what's up ahead, and my hope is in him alone, and I live for Him alone, that He would get glory from my life. And I'll tell you something, in the midst of those roadblocks, instead of looking at our circumstances and what is around us, if we will look to Him and have a single purpose to bring Him glory, guess what? God will guide us right through those roadblocks. And the last thing is this. Never let circumstances trump Christ. Never let circumstances trump Christ. Now, I said that in a very particular way for a reason. I want you to know that circumstances never do trump Christ. There's not one circumstance in your life or mine that ever has the power to unseat Jesus as Lord. He is God. He is King. He is Lord. He always has been. He always will be. And in the middle of your roadblock and trial, He will be Lord. Circumstances never trump Christ. But the way I said that was, never let circumstances trump Christ. As a believer, in your own heart and in your own life, don't become focused on the circumstances so much that they have unseated God as the focal point of your life. I can't help but be reminded of that story of Peter and the disciples when they're going across the water, and here Jesus comes walking on the water. And you know, it's always amazing to me when you hear liberal theologians try to explain how Jesus could have possibly walked on the water, like He froze the water first, then He walked on it. Or, you know, there were rocks under the water, and only because He was Jesus did He know where the rocks were and He could walk on the water. And that's so stupid. You think about it. God made the water. He can certainly walk on it if He wants to. You know, that's just the way it works. But Peter sees Him, and he says, "Lord, if it's You, invite me to come on the water with You." And Peter gets out of the boat at the Lord's invitation, and he walks on water. Now, that had to be a pretty incredible experience, wouldn't you say? But the story goes on. It says that when he saw the wind and the waves, he began to sink. We're just like Him, aren't we? He's walking on water with Jesus. And what's He looking at? The wind and the waves. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? You got Jesus, God in the flesh, walking right there with you on the water. You're the only one out of the boat, and you're looking at the wind and the waves. And you know what He did? He just let circumstances trump Christ. What happened? What happened? He began to sink, didn't he? He began to sink. He's taken a lot of criticism for that, but I tell you, we walk in that same path every time we run into a roadblock when we let circumstances trump Christ. I'll give him this, though. When he started sinking, he knew who to cry to. He was not so lost in his sinking situation that he forgot who was King. Lord, save me. And he did. Now listen, something about this verse that gets me, and we're going to spend all next week on this one verse, verse 21, okay? It's full of stuff. But let me just point out one thing. There are no verbs in this verse, okay? It simply says this, "For to me, to live, Christ. And to die, gain." The "is" that we have in the ESV is understood. But it almost, to me, has more power when you say, "For to me to live, Christ, and to die, gain." And when you think about it, he does the exact opposite of what most of us would do if we wrote that verse. We would say, "For to me to live, gain, to die, Christ," wouldn't we? We think about dying, we think about heaven and Jesus, and we say, you know what? Dying is Christ. But living is gain. We all want to go to heaven. We just don't want to go to heaven right now, do we? We all eagerly anticipate that day to spend all eternity with God in heaven. But God, I don't want to go right now, because for me to live, gain. Me to die, that's all Christ. What Paul says is, for me to live, Christ. To die, gain. You know what he's saying? He's saying, my life already belongs to Jesus. Circumstances or nothing else in this world rules me and owns me like Jesus. So let me live. It's all Jesus. But if I die, it's just more of Jesus without this body of sin, without any interference. Sweet, perfect fellowship with Jesus. You know what? I don't think any of us here in this room want to run into our next roadblock and stop. Stop growing in our faith. Stop living for Jesus. So what do? First thing is, don't be surprised that you have one. I mean, some of you are sitting here today and say, man, I'm glad he's preaching this sermon because I know somebody that's having trouble, and they always have trouble. And, man, my life's so easy. This isn't for me. This is really for them. Wait, just wait a minute, buddy. You're going to be driving down 75, get off 475, and believe it or not, in the middle of the day, you're going to come to a screeching halt, and roadblocks are going to be staring you in the face. We need to pay attention when life is easy so that when it gets hard, those roadblocks don't catch us by surprise and bring our faith to a halt. The next thing we need to do is simply, every day, in every way, live our whole life for Him. Jesus ran into a roadblock. At least the world thought it was one. It's called the cross. He died on it. They sealed his death with a tomb. And he showed his power to remove and run through roadblocks by rising from the dead, and he lives today. So don't let roadblocks stop the progress of your faith. Let's just walk in the footsteps of the Apostle Paul and run right through them. For to me, to live is Christ, and to die is gain. Bring them on. We're living for Jesus.
Thanks for listening. For more information on Eagles Landing First Baptist Church, visit our website at www.eagleslanding.org or call our church office at 770-957-1355. Live for Jesus.